This ePulmonology Review program is presented by DKP Med Radio.
The most important consideration is to realize that patients with mild asthma are at risk for experiencing severe exacerbations. Exacerbations are usually triggered by viral infections. These sort of events can potentially lead to exacerbations, whether it's a mild exacerbation requiring increased use of a rescue inhaler, moderate exacerbation requiring oral steroids, or severe exacerbation requiring a visit to the emergency department. Despite what some clinicians may think, studies show that up to a third of patients with mild asthma experience a severe exacerbation within a year.
Managing mild asthma, clinical considerations. Welcome to this edition of ePulmonology Review. Mild asthma. It's the most common diagnosis for patients with the key symptoms of chest wheezing and shortness of breath. But what's that diagnosis based on? What actually defines asthma? And what defines mild? Is it accurate to stage asthma severity by following the recently updated guidelines? And how should mild asthma be treated? What are the risks and benefits of short-acting beta agonists versus long-acting beta agonists versus inhaled corticosteroids? What do clinicians need to know to provide the best treatment for their patients? Those are some of the key questions we're going to discuss with today's guest, Dr. Ashraf Fauzi, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. For our guest disclosures and additional CME information, please go to our website, epulmonologyreview.org, and select the Volume 3, Issue 4 link. I'm Bob Busker, DKB Med Editorial Director and Managing Editor of ePulmonology Review. Dr. Fauzi, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Bob.
Our first learning objective focuses on the potential consequences of undertreatment of asthma that's been classified as mild and the guideline-recommended treatment strategies. So with that in mind, if you would please, Doctor, start us out in the clinic with a patient scenario.
Absolutely. We have today a 28-year-old woman who reports that she's noticed wheezing in her chest 3 to 4 times a week when doing moderately strenuous activities, such as walking up inclines, bringing up the laundry from the basement to her bedroom on the second floor of her house, or chasing her 3-year-old daughter. The wheezing resolves within minutes of rest. She also notes wheezing when she's exposed to strong perfumes or if she's outside in cold, dry weather. She's never been prescribed or used inhalers in the past, and she remembers that the symptoms were more frequent when she had an upper respiratory infection a couple of months ago and has woken up in the middle of the night with an episode of wheezing once in the last month. On physical exam, her breath sounds are clear and pulmonary function testing is performed prior to the visit and is normal. You diagnose the patient with asthma.
She reports wheezing with moderately strenuous activities, but her breath sounds are clear. And as you noted, her pulmonary function test, or PFT, is normal. You've diagnosed her with asthma, but by which criteria?
That's a great question. So diagnosing asthma can be pretty tricky, and you need a pretty broad differential when encountering a patient who has shortness of breath and wheezing, particularly if you're caring for an older adult with comorbidities. But in this case, it's pretty straightforward. It involves a younger, otherwise healthy woman with several classic symptoms. She has shortness of breath and wheezing with exertion when exposed to triggers such as perfumes and cold, dry air. Her symptoms were exacerbated by an upper respiratory infection, and she's had nighttime awakenings with shortness of breath and wheezing. The fact that her pulmonary function test is normal and her lungs are clear is actually fairly common in cases like this. Remember that asthma is episodic and usually comes on with activity or after exposure to allergens or other triggers. So when the patient is sitting in your office or doing pulmonary function tests in the lab, physical signs such as wheezing or obstruction on pulmonary function test isn't going to manifest. This is why we have provocation testing, such as the methacholine challenge test, which tries to trigger symptoms in the PFT lab so that we can capture the abnormalities. I'm not suggesting in any way that this test should be routinely done or that it needs to be done in this patient specifically. Asthma is typically a clinical diagnosis that relies fairly heavily on thorough, detailed history. And in this case, in many cases like it, you should be able to diagnose asthma without any further testing.
Well, talk to us about the severity of her asthma. How would you stage that?
So much like the diagnosis of asthma, determining the severity can also be pretty tricky. Not all guidelines are aligned in the recommendations regarding how to stage asthma. And in addition to that, these definitions have changed over the years. There are three organizations that we need to be aware of who produce asthma guidelines. There's the European Respiratory Society and the American Thoracic Society, or ERS and ATS, which put out joint guidelines. The second one is GINA, which stands for the Global Initiative for Asthma, and is probably the most well-known of these organizations. The third is the National Asthma Education and Prevention Program Coordinating Committee Expert Panel Working Group, which is part of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, or NHLBI for short. In the mid-2000s, the ERS, ATS, and GINA guidelines shifted how they stage asthma. Their new staging definition requires asthma to be staged retrospectively, meaning that the stage of asthma is based on the level of treatment required to control symptoms and exacerbations. So essentially, the asthma severity is based on how difficult it is to treat. In this case, the patient has never been prescribed inhalers, nor has she ever used them before. Here, we can fall back on the NHLBI guidelines to help us stage our patient's asthma. Although these guidelines were recently updated in 2020, the expert panel didn't change the definition for staging asthma in that update. In this case, our patient falls under the mild persistent asthma definition since she's having symptoms at least twice a week, nighttime awakenings 3 to 4 times a month, and has normal lung function.
You've diagnosed this patient with mild asthma. What would be your key considerations for prescribing therapy?
The most important consideration is to realize that patients with mild asthma are at risk for experiencing severe exacerbations. Exacerbations are usually triggered by viral infections. And if you remember back to our story, this patient experienced worse symptoms when she had a viral infection. These sort of events can potentially lead to exacerbations. Whether it's a mild exacerbation requiring increased use of her rescue inhaler, for instance, moderate exacerbation requiring oral steroids, or severe exacerbation requiring a visit to the emergency department or a hospitalization. Despite what some clinicians may think, studies show that up to a third of patients with mild asthma experience a severe exacerbation within a year.
With that in mind, what would be your treatment of choice in this patient?
First, let's do a quick cursory review of the pathophysiology of asthma. Shortness of breath and wheezing in asthma stem from inflammation in the airways, which leads to bronchoconstriction. An asthma exacerbation occurs when the inflammation gets out of control. Because inflammation is so important in asthma, an inhaled corticosteroid, or ICS, is critical because it targets and decreases that inflammation and has been shown by several studies to be the best therapeutic option for reducing the risk of severe exacerbations. For our patient, even though she has mild asthma, as we said earlier, she's still at risk for experiencing severe exacerbations. Because of this, a regimen containing an inhaled corticosteroid should be prescribed to this patient.
An effective inhaled corticosteroid regimen, ICS, what would that be? What does the evidence say?
Things have changed fairly significantly over the past 5 years because of new evidence, and all three of the guidelines we mentioned earlier have altered their recommendations. For mild asthma, you have the choice between a maintenance ICS plus as-needed short-acting beta agonist or SABA, or a combined inhaler with ICS and long-acting beta agonist for Motrol, used as needed when symptoms arise. As I mentioned, there were several studies that support using as-needed ICS for Motrol for individuals with mild asthma. One of these, O'Brien and colleagues, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2018, was a randomized control trial that randomized participants to one of three arms. The first was AstraZeneca short-acting beta agonist, like albuterol, used alone. The second arm was a maintenance ICS with AstraZeneca short-acting beta agonist. And the third was AstraZeneca ICS formoterol. In the study, they found that maintenance ICS and AstraZeneca ICS formoterol were similar in preventing asthma exacerbations in people with mild asthma. However, maintenance ICS was superior to ICS formoterol in controlling asthma symptoms, but ICS formoterol was better than AstraZeneca SABA. The biggest issue with using maintenance ICS are poor adherence and potential systemic side effects of the steroid. With poor adherence to maintenance therapy, patients sometimes over-rely on their SABA, which could lead to an asthma exacerbation. In this case, you have a choice between the AstraZeneca ICS formoterol or maintenance ICS with AstraZeneca SABA. What you prescribe will be based on shared decision-making with the patient and your sense of the patient's potential adherence to medication, and balancing the importance of symptom control and a desire to minimize exposure to inhaled steroids, since the O'Brien study also showed that participants in the AstraZeneca ICS formoterol arm were exposed to less than a fifth of the median daily dose of ICS as the maintenance ICS group.
Formoterol. You've been very specific about naming formoterol as the long-acting beta agonist in this combination. Why is that?
That's a great pickup. So formoterol is a fast-onset, long-acting beta agonist, so that could provide quick relief when the patient is experiencing acute symptoms. Unlike some of the other long-acting beta agonists that may take several minutes or dozens of minutes to start working, formoterol acts fairly quickly.
Are there any treatment approaches that should be avoided in this patient?
Definitely. In this patient, I would avoid prescribing short-acting beta agonist alone to be used as needed, because regular use of short-acting beta agonist by patients with stable asthma increases airway hyperresponsiveness and response to allergens, promotes inflammation, and leads to worse asthma control, while overuse increases the risk of exacerbations.
Well, thank you, Doctor, for that very interesting and thought-provoking discussion. Our learning objective for this part of the program is to describe the potential consequences of undertreating asthma that is classified as mild and the guideline-recommended treatment strategies. Under that umbrella, what are the key things you'd want our learners to take away from our discussion?
I have four key takeaways from this. First, the definition of mild asthma varies and has changed over time. The second one is that patients with mild asthma have been found to be at risk for experiencing severe exacerbations. The third one is that using an inhaled corticosteroid-containing regimen, either as a maintenance inhaler or as needed, for patients with mild asthma has been shown to reduce the risk of severe exacerbations. And finally, adherence to inhaled corticosteroid maintenance therapy is often poor.
Thank you for sharing your insights, Doctor. And we'll return with Dr. Ashraf Fawzi from Johns Hopkins in just a moment.
Providing the best care for your patients takes more than identifying the most relevant information. It takes expert opinion and analysis of the data, combined with expert advice about how to most effectively put that information into practice. It takes the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine e-literature reviews. Top experts in their specialties, selecting the most important peer-reviewed literature, analyzing the information, and explaining what it can mean to clinical practice. E-literature reviews, independent medical education, CME, certified by Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and presented without charge by DKB Med.
Welcome back to ePulmonology Review. Our guest is Dr. Ashraf Fawzi, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Our topic is mild asthma, and we've been discussing the potential consequences of undertreating it. Let's turn now to our second learning objective. explain the key considerations when choosing between PRN budesonide formoterol and maintenance inhaled corticosteroid therapy in reducing the risk of severe exacerbations in patients with mild asthma. So with that in mind, if you would please, Dr. Fauci, take us back to the clinic with another patient scenario.
Certainly. So this case, we have a 48-year-old man who presents to your clinic for evaluation of limited exercise tolerance with wheezing. He reports a history of childhood asthma that he says disappeared in early adulthood. He has to rest several times because of shortness of breath when exercising or walking up a steep hill. He uses an albuterol inhaler that was prescribed to him in urgent care, which tends to relieve his symptoms. He reports that he does not need it more than 5 times per week. He's woken up 3 times from sleep in the past month because of wheezing, and those symptoms were relieved when he used his albuterol inhaler. 10 months ago, he was taken to the emergency room after being unable to catch his breath at the gym and was prescribed a 5-day course of oral steroids. He's also been diagnosed with hypertension and is prescribed an antihypertensive medication that he admits he typically only remembers to take 3 times per week. You order blood work that shows an eosinophil count of 0.1 times 10 to the 9 per liter.
So this is an individual previously diagnosed with asthma, but apparently prescribed a treatment regimen that does not seem to have been optimized. In your experience, doctor, how frequently does this occur?
We see this fairly often for a variety of reasons. Sometimes asthma just isn't a top priority in a busy primary care visit, or the patient is getting their asthma care exclusively at urgent care, or the patient hasn't been able to get their inhaler prescribed to them because the insurance coverage or the cost of the inhaler is too high. It's important to understand that patients' past experiences and identify any barriers to care when evaluating an individual for asthma.
That said, what would you do to optimize this therapy?
Although this patient has had a severe exacerbation in the last year, his asthma would still be categorized as mild if we were to use the symptom-based definition of the NHLBI guidelines. While short-acting beta agonists like albuterol can relieve symptoms, it doesn't address the underlying inflammation. This patient has had a severe exacerbation in the last year, which can happen in patients with mild asthma. A therapeutic priority in this case would be to reduce the risk of future exacerbations. To do this, he needs a regimen that includes an inhaled corticosteroid in order to reduce airway inflammation. Two potential approaches would be as-needed budesonide formoterol or maintenance inhaled corticosteroid plus as-needed short-acting beta agonist.
What factors would help you choose between these approaches?
Well, there's a hint in this case presentation about the patient's potential adherence to the medication. He only takes his daily antihypertensive 3 times per week. It's likely that this patient is going to have difficulty adhering to maintenance inhaled corticosteroid regimen that could be up to twice a day. A reasonable alternative would be as-needed budesonide formoterol. Based on the results of the O'Brien study that I mentioned earlier, the patient's risk of severe exacerbation will be equivalently reduced with either regimen. But with the as-needed ICS formoterol, he only needs to use it when he's experiencing symptoms. Patients who are prescribed maintenance ICS and have poor adherence typically revert to overusing their as-needed short-acting beta agonist, which puts them at higher risk for exacerbations. This is probably a good time to mention that the FDA recently approved a budesonide albuterol inhaler that is an ICS combined with a short-acting beta agonist, based on evidence of efficacy as a rescue inhaler among individuals with moderate to severe asthma who are already on maintenance ICS-containing regimen. The study by Poppy and colleagues, which was published in 2022 in the New England Journal of Medicine, was a randomized control trial that compared the new combination ICS-SABA inhaler used as needed in 2 different doses to as-needed SABA alone. Remember, these patients were already on maintenance inhaled corticosteroid therapy. The study found that compared to SABA only, the higher dose combination ICS-SABA significantly lowered the risk of severe exacerbations by 26%. Its efficacy in mild asthma, though, has still not been studied. So for now, the only option to replace a SABA-only rescue inhaler with a rescue inhaler that combines with inhaled corticosteroid would be to use a formoterol-containing combination ICS inhaler. And in select patients with moderate to severe asthma, you could consider this new inhaler that combines the inhaled corticosteroid with a short-acting beta agonist. But so far, it's not for people with mild asthma.
So far, it's not for people with mild asthma. Good caveat. One last question on this patient, Dr. Fauci. In the patient's situation you described, you provided the value of his eosinophil count. What role do eosinophils play in your decision-making when treating this patient?
To answer that, I'm going to turn to a study by Pavord and colleagues, which was published in Lancet Respiratory Medicine in 2020. Patients with mild asthma and who had an eosinophil count greater than 0.3 times 10 to the 9 per liter saw the most benefit from getting a maintenance ICS inhaler compared to those who were on as-needed short-acting beta agonist alone. This patient's eosinophil count is fairly low. So combined with the concern for potentially poor adherence with maintenance inhaler regimen, this helps support the decision to prescribe as-needed budesonide formoterol rather than maintenance ICS.
Thank you, Dr. Fauci. Our learning objective for this part of our discussion is to explain the key considerations when choosing between PRN budesonide formoterol versus maintenance inhaled corticosteroid therapy in reducing the risk of severe exacerbations in patients with mild asthma. What are the key things you'd want our learners to be able to take back to their clinics?
I have three key learning points for this. First, as-needed budesonide formoterol and maintenance inhaled corticosteroid have similar efficacy in reducing the risk of severe exacerbations in people with mild asthma. Second, for patients with mild asthma, choosing between these options depends on patient adherence and whether the therapeutic priority is asthma symptom control or minimizing exposure to inhaled corticosteroid. And third, where adherence to maintenance inhaler therapy is a concern, as-needed budesonide formoterol can be a good alternative.
Dr. Ashraf Fauci from the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise in today's ePulmonology Review program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For ePulmonology Review, I'm Bob Busker. To receive CME credit for this activity, please take the post test at epulmonology.dkbmed.com. ePulmonology Review is supported by educational grants from Merck & Company and Mylan Specialty LP, a Viatris company. The opinions and recommendations expressed by faculty and other experts whose input is included in this program are their own. This enduring material is produced for educational purposes only. ePulmonology Review is copyright, with all rights reserved, by DKB Med, LLC. Thank you for participating.